Do you ever feel like you're always on? Your phone is blowing up with notifications, you have commitments to friends and family, and not to mention work. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. It's a crisp and refreshing beer that even tells you it's cold when the mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue. When I need to hit reset, I grab a Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/BlueWire. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, Marlins fans, and welcome to a very special Swings and Mishes as the Marlins have gone through their own new rebrand officially as of yesterday. That would be on Thursday, November 15th. It's now Friday, November 16th, and I am Jeremy Taché, the producer of Swings and Mishes, joined by our one and only host, Craig Mish. Craig, how you doing on this fine Marlins rebrand Friday?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to see that it's cool. The new jerseys now are out, and you can see them on the, certainly at the Marlins team store, but also on the Marlins website. And also on their Twitter handle, and to see Jose Ureña and Sandy Alcantara and Pablo Lopez wearing them, as well as Pete O'Brien. Pretty cool. I like it. I like what I see so far. And certainly they kept a lot of fans waiting was it Thursday too, to see this come out. So it was a fun process. I think that so far they've, kind of handled it the right way. Marlins CEO Derek Jeter went on a couple of radio stations in South Florida. He went on 940. He also went on 560. A lot of the things that he said were things that he said previously. So not a ton of new information from there. Mm-hmm. On Joe Rose's show, he said that was interesting. He said that owners around Major League Baseball, and this is something I hadn't heard before, had offered to help him, which was kind of curious. And then he made a kind of tongue-in-cheek joke about how he at some point talked to the Red Sox, and The Red Sox offered to help, like just kind of, you'll get your feet wet as an owner. And then he thought there was a hidden camera somewhere, because obviously he was a former Yankee and the Red Sox. So that was the one thing out of all of the interviews that I heard. I'm not saying that the interview gave nothing on those two places, but again, that was kind of the one thing that it caught my ear that I thought was funny, because a lot of the other stuff we've reported here and I know, and certainly at some point, Jeremy, I'm hoping that Derek Jeter does do this podcast. I've been promised that, but I have no, it's a TBD and a TBA and it could be years from now.
Yeah, but we'll just keep it going and then we can just
eventually
wait on top.
Eventually he'll do it. Yeah, but I think that what you're seeing here, and I've been covering this for a long time, but it's the jerseys are important, the logo is important. The most important thing as to what's being done here, and they'll never say this publicly, is eliminating anything that had to do with the old ownership. That's what's happening here.
Exactly.
And yes, they're rebranding, building, trying to win, all that, but it can't be overstated enough just how poorly things went once they moved into this new building. I mean, what tangible thing was a positive in the last 7 years or 8 years since they've been in that building? I'll give you two things. One was the one magical year that Stanton had, winning the MVP before they traded him.
Right.
And the other was a player that lost his life tragically in Jose Fernandez.
Right.
And look, Ozuna had a nice year. Yeah, sure. And Yelich was okay. And JT is great. But that there really hasn't been anything in a long time. The previous regime in the old building did a great job, man. They got Carlos Delgado. They won a World Series and Pudge at the plate in 97. There was a lot of things that happened. But once they moved into the new stadium, I shouldn't have to try and find positive things in 8 years. Nothing good happened. I mean, literally nothing. Right. So this is a flushing of everything that's happened in the last 7 or 8 years, in my opinion. And notice, by the way, how they're still holding on to history from the old building, and they've done that with the teal and everything else. But right. Nothing good has happened outside of a couple of nice performances and a couple of great players. But that's not enough for 8 years to say, hey, we had one phenomenal year of Stanton. And 2 great years of a player named Ozuna, and Real Muto came into his own, and Yelich was okay until we traded. There just wasn't a lot to like. And I think that this is a new day for Marlins baseball, but it's also eliminating all the negativity and the circus from the last 8 years. That's my opinion with this.
Right, and you can even see that in what we've seen in some of the new models of what the stadium will look like on the inside, too. It's not just putting a new product out in terms of the jerseys and what you're seeing happening on the field, but it's surrounding the field and seeing that, you know, they got rid of the sculpture, they're putting in multi-layered standing room seats, that's kind of an oxymoron, but standing room only sections, almost what looked to be sort of like an ivy up against the wall out there in the back where that standing room will be, just looking for that full rebrand and a full, every time you walk into that stadium, you're going to think about the new experience as opposed to the old. Do you have any thoughts specifically on the colors, or is that just sort of a nice little addition for you? You know, not much of a thought there.
Yeah, I like it. The one thing that I'll say for people listening to this podcast, there is a dynamic with me and my family that becomes a little bit difficult because I have a 6-year-old son who goes to the Marlins games with his dad, me, and goes to spring training and likes the players and imagine. So I'm on the side of the media also. So there does create an interesting dynamic for me because I can look at it from a fan's perspective and I can look at it from a media perspective. And I've tried to kind of separate the two. So, you know, he's excited about it and he loves the new colors and he's asking, can he get a new shirt? And I think that as someone covering it from the media point of view, and I think that this is important for Derek Jeter and Bruce Sherman and everyone there, is to engage the young fans where the back of the jersey, Jeremy, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the name. They just love baseball. And young kids want to love baseball. They want the environment. And sometimes if you create an atmosphere within a ballpark, especially for the young fans, it doesn't really matter if they win or lose. I know it sounds crazy, but in 2019, if they create an atmosphere that is conducive to kids and having a good time, it may not matter as much if they lose 95 games. And, you know, my son, he's aware of the players and who's been traded and who's there. And we talk about it and he asks those questions, but he just wants to go have a good time at the game and have some food and climb something and throw a ball around. And if they can find a way to bring those young fans and force the parents to bring those young fans to the game, and this is a good way to do it by changing the jersey and showing what the new colors look like and engaging the fans. This is all part of that process. The other part of what I think is supremely important, and they're trying to do this now, and I think that this isn't talked about enough also, it's being missed, is Marlins Park. They're trying to make it a destination for other things. There's no reason why it shouldn't be. Why should the BB&T Center where the Panthers play and the American Airlines Arena where the Heat play, why shouldn't the Marlins have concerts and events and things going on there? What happened in the last 7 or 8 years? I think there was a Guns N' Roses concert there. There may have been a couple of other things, but what's going on? Like, did they just completely forget that, you know, and you know, like think about a Billy Joel concert there, you know, like, and again, that, you know, shows my age a little bit. It doesn't have to be Billy Joel. It could be hip hop, anything else. But the point is create that as being not just a place that's open for 5 months or 6 months and done, but something that things are happening year round there. Where's the concert? Where's the event? Oh, it's at Marlins Park. Like, when have we said that in the last 7 years? Oh, where is it at? It's at the BB&T. It's at the American Airlines Arena. Beyonce, I think, was the other concert, big one, that was at Marlins Park. I'm not saying that there was nothing there for the last 8 years. There's just very little. Right. And again, the location of Little Havana also, you know, maybe is a deterrent for people in Broward County. I know they're going to try and engage people there as well. But that is also a big part of what's going on. And look, people are only going to talk about and see and hear what's in the front of their face. What I try to do is dig, as people know from listening to me and following me, behind the scenes as to what some of the non-tangible things that you don't see could potentially be going on. So I think that's something also to keep an eye on and watch, Jeremy, in the future.
Right. And in terms of a baseball experience, one thing I was having a conversation yesterday was that in terms of a baseball experience where they're bringing in so much of this Latin flair, I think that's number one, obviously, for the fan base of the Marlins to try to bring in more Latin fans to feel more comfortable in the stadium. But how about also making that part of the experience for the opposing fan that then wants to come watch games at Marlins Park? I think that's part of it. You're trying to sell tickets one way or another. At first, you have to fill the seats. Period. Forget who's in the crowd, whether it's your fans or somebody else's. This is part of making Marlins baseball, like you said, for your son. It makes it a more fun experience for him just to come and watch baseball, regardless of the name on the back of the jersey. I think that does something for the fans of the Miami Marlins and the fans of other teams possibly coming in and wanting to go to Marlins Park and thinking, wow, this is beautiful. Like the fans that show up at Camden Yards or in Pittsburgh at PNC Park and say, man, that was a great experience as I went to that ballpark.
Yeah, and they don't have any of that experience, or they haven't had any of that experience going on. And just think of it. My son is six. Like, imagine 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Even if those kids play baseball or t-ball or organized baseball of some kind, it is very hard for a young kid to sit through nine innings no matter what is going on in Major League Baseball. You have to have diversions there. And in the past, really the only things that you could do at Marlins Park were basically go to right field, and my buddy Tutti Frutti the Clown was there, and he makes a nice balloon for the kids, and that's about it, you know? And you gotta have more to it than that. And that kind of experience, if you can change it, again, parents are going to spoil their kids. When kids want to do things that are fun and they go to their parents and say, you know, buy me a toy or do this. Like, you want those kids to say, you know, I want a new Marlins shirt. I want to go to the game. And how do you do that? It's not just by nine innings of baseball. It just doesn't work for a young kid, especially in a season like 2019, where, let's be honest, the team is not going to be good. So how do you change that? You create diversions. You have additional things that are fun. Now, look, I'm not the marketing director there, so I can't give you all the answers. But I know that young kids, again, they may gravitate to one or two players, but it is the fan experience that's going to bring people back over and over again in a situation where the on-field product of the major league team is not going to be as good as you want it to be just yet.
Right. And when you look at the colors specifically of this team and just moving to that side of it with the rebrand, with the logo, they've got the colors. I forget what the colors that they called the black and the gray.
Caliente red?
The red is Caliente red and the blue is Miami blue, which a lot of people have compared to the blue of these Vice jerseys for the Heat. It's a similar shade. But what I do like is when you look at those colors, the blue, the red, obviously we all go red, white, and blue when we think about the United States and the American flag. But when you look at this blue specifically and the red combined with so much of the black, it's a lot more similar to those Latin American countries and their colors, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Cuba, all of those flags and all of those feelings there. These jerseys, the black ones specifically, look a lot like what you would see for a World Baseball Classic jersey for the Dominican Republic, right? That's part of what the Marlins are trying to do here.
For
is
sure.
Very obviously, based off of all of what we've seen between the hashtag being our colores, not just our colors. You know, we're seeing a lot of marketing to the Latin American group, the Latin group that would watch this team that lives near the stadium for the most part. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the Marlins marketing, seemingly very specifically to the Latin American community. I know Derek Jeter's spoken a lot about this.
They've seen the attendance for the World Baseball Classic, and there's some way trying to recaptivate that experience. Again, these were people who were representing their country, and so therefore people from that country were coming to watch. And again, it was the best players in the world playing at Marlins Park at that time. So I don't know that that's necessarily a good example, but I do think that that's a smart play for them. I don't know whether or not it's going to succeed just like anything else, because in the past, it's been very hard to get people from South Florida to go to anything when their team is not winning, Jeremy. It's just a fact, right? Whether it is the Heat, the Dolphins, the Panthers, or anything else, we in South Florida as fans don't go when the team isn't good. So they'll have to get creative with that, and hopefully that will work out. But for me to make a guess as to whether or not it will work would be foolish, because, Jeremy, I just don't know. I think it seems to be the smart move to try and capture the community that's in 305 and right around that. I'm not saying that it hasn't been done before, because they certainly have tried before, but the marketing effort, I think, is going to be astronomical when it comes to the Marlins. And if they can capture the minds, forget about the wallets for a minute, the minds of the people, and just say, hey, look at us, because that's just something that hasn't been done either. So time will tell, Jeremy. We'll see.
Right. I tend to agree on that, where it's about capturing and making the Marlins Miami's team. You know, the Heat have seemingly had a stranglehold on that since the Big Three era, where everyone sort of identified, and the Dolphins have had the longest run in this city of feeling like the team. To really become Miami's team, the Marlins are trying to market toward, you know, the Latin American groups. And for anyone else that is sort of feeling left out, well, this marketing is new. The Marlins haven't, in the past, I haven't seen much of marketing toward anybody, really. And in the marketing that they've done, it's not like that worked in terms of bringing fans to the stadium. The attendance has been low for the Marlins for years. So maybe trying to tap into a different market, a market that is right next to the stadium for the most part. We just said that the stadium's literally in Little Havana. You know, trying to tap into that market is important. And they're doing that today specifically as they're, you know, they're going around in Dade and Broward counties and showing off these jerseys and showing off the new logo. You've got Jeter, Mike Hill, Chip Bowers out in the community, but also some of the players, Sandy Alcantara, Lewis Brinson, Pablo Lopez, Peter O'Brien, Trevor Richards, Jose Ureña, apparently Austin Dean and Brian Anderson are at a wedding. Brian Anderson getting married.
Yes, he's getting married this weekend.
Yeah, and Brian Anderson.
I reported that yesterday, yeah. Right. And Austin Dean came out on Twitter and said that he was there. And you know, you don't look into – I don't really look into any of that except for, you know, JT, which we'll talk about. But really good effort from them getting all the Marlins players involved. And I will, by the time this airs, I think that the day will be over on Friday. But I'm planning on making a stop at one of these places too. So, I'm very, very nice for them to bring players back, bring them in, reengage the fan base. Actually, they really did this at a good time too. The Dolphins have a bye week.
Yep.
The Heat's up, the Heat's down. The Panthers are a little bit on a roll. But again, this is more of a Dade County and then East Broward type thing. So, timing all around worked out very well for the Marlins. I think they've captured all of South Florida now with these jerseys and these rebranding. The only thing, Jeremy, is you can't do this all the time. You know, you can only do this once.
Right.
You can't next week say, look at the sneaker, look at the cleats, you know, like, look at the gloves. Like, you can't do it. So this is the time. And they've done a good job to this point with that.
Yeah, it's good timing and getting everyone discussing it. That's for sure. If you go up and down
everybody
on your Twitter timeline right now, everybody's talking about it. But just real quick to wrap up this episode, and you brought it up yourself here, JT Realmuto, there was a report from John Morosi that the Marlins are looking for either Tucker or Whitley from the Astros. Similar to what you've said throughout this process, and you know, just a real quick thought on JT Realmuto as we move into next week and beyond.
Yep, nothing has changed. I reported everything that you're seeing out there today. So if you follow me on Twitter at Craig Mish, you follow this podcast at Swings and Mishes, I promise everyone that you have come to the right place with this story. Not going to do anything on it this weekend, Jeremy. I believe that next week we will have a little bit more clarity and more information on it. But this weekend is kind of the Marlins rebranding of their jerseys, of their hats, of their logo. I assure you, nobody is more dialed in to this story than I am. And as time goes on, we will get there with this story. But Jeremy, this is nothing different than I've reported. The Astros, you know, the Marlins are never good at getting Forrest Whitley from the Astros. That's not happening, as I've reported and done on this podcast before. They asked for Kyle Tucker. They were told no. There's a small window there. Maybe they would say yes. I still believe that this is going to be a 2-for-1 deal. In this deal, the Houston would only give up Tucker, which doesn't make sense because that means it's a 1-for-1 deal. But it's fun to speculate. It's fun to put stuff out there. It's fun to get the ball rolling. I don't know that it's fun for the Marlins on a day that they're rebranding all their stuff to go you-know-what's to the wall with Real Muto trade stuff. So I'm going to pass on that today. And next week, I assure you, and throughout the offseason, I assure you, there will be nobody more dialed in on this story than me. The end.
You heard that here first, folks. Craig Mish dialed in on this story and dialed in on uniform talk as we were throughout this episode of Swings and Mishes. Craig, thanks for joining me for this quick episode of Swings and Mishes. And we'll be back next week. And as you just said, with more JT Realmuto talk and more Miami Marlins.
Hopefully so. Have a great weekend, everybody. And we'll be back for one more of these before Thanksgiving.
And a real quick, go UCF Knights, College Game Day.
Good luck. And one more quick note before we go. For those of you who wager on sports, you know that BetDSI.com is a big sponsor here of the Swings and Mishes podcast. In fact, this offseason, they're posting odds of all of the Major League Baseball free agents and where they're going to end up, including Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. And there'll be a lot more of those to come. In fact, at BetDSI.com, you can bet on anything, including all of the big games in college football this weekend. One that I'm keeping an eye on that I have an investment in is that West Virginia game against Oklahoma State. We need the Mountaineers this weekend, Jeremy. Gotta have them this weekend. Just win the game outright. We gotta get them somehow into the Final Four. And if you use the promo code SWINGS101, that's SWINGS101, over at BetDSI.com, they're going to match your first deposit up to $2,500. That's over at BetDSI.com. Use the promo code SWINGS101, college basketball, the NBA, all of the futures in Major League Baseball, as well, of course, as college football and the NFL. Go right now, make your first deposit over at BetDSI.com.
Get on Team Shaq with WynnBET. We're playing parlays, boosting odds, and laying the wildest prop bets. Don't miss another game. Download the WynnBET sports betting app today.
Sign up today and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 first-time wager on a straight bet or parlay. Offer subject to change, terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.